Coming to Northeast Wisconsin live from the Civic Media Studios and featuring TV and radio broadcast veteran John Mino, along with the City of Green Bay's longest serving mayor, Jim Schmidt. This is Mino and the Mayor. Begin the day with a friendly voice, a companion unobtrusive. And here are your hosts, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back. 97.9 FM, WGBW, 98.3 FM, WISS. And, of course, the Civic Media app on a beautiful morning out there. Going to be 87 in the area today, pretty much just like yesterday. Joining us right now, I believe, from New York City, Tim Struby, ESPN, the magazine, and a whole bunch of other publications. Tim, I just saw it's going to be 91 in New York today. Is that correct?
It is, and I was just listening to the weather report from you guys with envy, I have to say, because it's about 87 degrees already, and it is baked in and brutal out here, I tell you that.
And we have less humidity than you, too, so there's double reason to be envious of us.
Jim's daughter lives in New York, and of course my daughter lives in New York. So.
Yeah, well, I have two daughters in New York, so and one actually is...
A writer.
She's a writer. She works, she's an assistant publisher for Atlantic Grove. And the other one is in medicine, but they love it out there. I mean, they'll put up with the weather anytime because of all the amenities that you have. What burb are you in, or where are you at?
Absolutely. I'm in Brooklyn. I was in Manhattan for many years and then finally made the move out here, which is a little quieter.
A little more residential. Yeah. Like the one was in Park Slope and then was in Brooklyn Heights, but then the other one moved to Manhattan because that's like unbelievable energy right there, and at that age, she can do that.
Still time for you guys to move out here.
We'll pass.
You know?
Yeah.
We can do it just as well as they can in Wisconsin.
Okay.
You know, and I've been to your state many times.
Oh.
And, yes, you know, I think last story I did with there was the Lumberjack World Championship.
Rhinelander?
And a story on and a log rolling up at Hayward.
Hayward, yep. Right. Okay, yep. That's always a fun event, actually. Hey, Tim, you sent me some of your things. I love the how eclectic you are with what you write about. But the bottom line, whether it's a sports story for ESPN or some other magazine, you really want that human element. You don't want to deal with statistics and whatever, whatever. You want to find out what makes these people tick in your feature stories, don't you?
Absolutely. And, you know, writing about famous athletes or famous people, as you guys I'm sure know, has its limitations because, you know, people can't speak freely. And my stories were kind of getting into when I wrote about well-known athletes, I like to get them very early in their career or very late in their career or even after their career because they have a kind of greater sense of honesty and a better perspective on life to that degree. And I like to take my time doing it because, you know, it's so easy to misrepresent people if you are just sitting down doing one interview with them and to spend that time and, you know, weeks and weeks. You know, one of the stories I sent you was about NFL players and how they adjust to real life after football, even if they have their money and their health. And, you know, it takes time to understand their lives and their day-to-day routines and how they really, you know, live this new life. And you can't do that with just, you know, one or two interviews.
And Tim, I along with that, I'm sure you got to build up that trust, right? I mean, yeah, I that's really important that if you really want to get, you know, behind the curtain, you can't do that in one interview. I don't care how great of an interviewer you are. They just have to trust you and be
no
able
question.
To, and really be able to confide in you, quite honestly.
Absolutely. And I always tell when I speak to, you know, writing classes, I say, listen, I just hang around long enough and you don't say much. You don't kind of insert yourself that much. You just hang around long enough till people are accustomed to you being there and then things change. Then you can really see how people behave even when they're not speaking to you. That's when you learn even more, when they're comfortable enough where, you know, the facade of the public face is mm-hmm. off and you see what sort of person they really are. And it's just about spending time and picking your spots. And, you know, interviewing is an art. I mean, you guys know it's not easy to elicit the truth from people a lot of times.
You know, when I was in college, my goal was to write for Sports Illustrated, like a Dan Jenkins or some of those guys that would do those great in-depth feature stories. I just thought that was the magic of journalism and sports in those days. Obviously, things have changed, but you kind of lived that dream a little bit with ESPN, the magazine. I mean, you're probably a sports nut, and to be able to kind of pull that curtain back and see the other side of it, that has to be pretty self-fulfilling for you in your career, huh?
It was, and it's, you know, it was, ESPN was great because they gave you an opportunity to do very offbeat stories, and my stories were always about identity.
Yeah.
And sports is a great vehicle for that, you know, because you have guys on the rise, guys on fault, ladies or men, you know, and I've done both. And it's an inherent drama that's kind of built into it. Are people going to succeed? Are they going to survive, et cetera, et cetera? And, you know, but that can apply across the board. It doesn't even need to apply to, I did a story, I spent a year and a half researching the personal dating lives of high-end escorts.
And yeah, I'll give up that one.
John told me that. I'm like, I gotta get this guy's number.
that required an immense amount of trust on their part because, I mean, for a variety of issues. And I've also written about, you know, mobsters or bookies or, you know, the sort of other side of life. And that requires trust. But once you build that and you get a reputation for that, then it just gets easier and easier to do because, you know, again, people trust you. And it's very hard to get people to speak openly these days.
But, Tim, I got to say this, though. Things have changed so much. I mean, even when Jim was in politics here, he was mayor for 16 years. And I bet any reporter could literally show up at your office, Jim, and you'd, yep, sit down. We'll talk. Nowadays, especially, I mean, I can't imagine you walking up to Derek Jeter or Aaron Judge or somebody like that in the locker room in a clubhouse these days saying, hey, do you got a half an hour tomorrow to, you know, I mean, there's so many different things have changed so much in sports coverage. And I don't think for the better in some ways in regards to the access and the personal touch and relationships. Would you agree?
Without question. It's really hard. It's sort of, I mean, it says the security and, you know, those PR guys, they are, you know, they're like
gatekeepers,
the guards at Buckingham Palace.
Yep.
You know, it really is tough. And it depends on the PR guys. I won't name names, but I've dealt with some who are just, you know, it's a power trip.
Yep.
And it just makes your life difficult.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, I guess their players have gotten burned in the past and such, but that's what, you know, interviewing, you go to these press conferences, I feel bad for the beat writers for baseball and such who have to ask these questions every day to these guys, you know, and it's the same recycled thing. I mean, have you guys noticed that interviews are getting harder, even, let's say, someone coming on your show? I mean, is it the same? Is it across the board?
No question. Todd's shaking his head right now.
But yep. I want to say, though, about Johnny and I, John's been in the media for 40 years, and I've been in politics for a lot of people know us, and it's pretty lighthearted. I mean, many people after they're on our show will say, you know, that was a lot more fun than I thought it was going to be, or I really enjoyed that. I think in defense of the person you're trying to interview is we don't like when people spin the story to what they want. So this whole self-promotion with your own Facebook page, your own Twitter account, where they don't even need reporters anymore because they've been burned. I mean,
and they could present their story exactly the way they want to present it.
But if they had someone they trusted, they would, you know, they're much better writers than the person they're interviewing. You know, like I think Tim could put together the story, but you know, there's just, it's so much easier just to sit in bed and tweet your own
or have your publicist do it.
Yeah.
Right.
But
totally. And you brought up Dan Jenkins, you know, back in the day, athletes knew Dan Jenkins and they knew they could trust him based on his reputation, the quality of his work, that he was going to do a good job. And nowadays, you know, first of all, anybody can be kind of a writer, you know, you get things are popping up. There's just shorter stories and I get it because the quality of writing has probably gone downhill. Now, politics is a totally different story. That is, I can't even imagine navigating that these days. I mean, it must be much more difficult.
Now, Jim's daughter, of course, went into writing, wanted to be a professional writer, has succeeded in many ways.
It's tough.
What kind of encouragement would you give for a young, let's say somebody in high school, and they're going to get a college degree in journalism, and they want to be a writer? What would you tell them, Tim?
Go to law school. I would tell them...
be a fireman.
Yeah. Learn a vocation.
Can you weld?
Yeah, right. I'm thinking about it at this point, I promise. I love encouraging younger people, I say that these days, to write. I mean, if you love it, it's a calling. Like, I didn't start till I was 28 because I just had to do it. You know, I encourage it, but stay true to yourself, to read a lot. You know, do you want to be a writer or do you want to be semi-famous, you know, and have a lot of, like you said, do you want to have a lot of Facebook followers or do you want to be a good writer?
Right.
There's the trade-off, because good writing doesn't often come with mass popularity. It can, but it doesn't always do so. And, you know, you see all these kids. I mean, I always tell young writers to just, like, keep reading, keep writing, talk to other writers. You know, it's not an art, but it's a highly skilled craft.
It's close to an art. It's close to an art, and good readers appreciate good writing, and you know we just
the art part is somebody getting a quarter of the way through your story and wanting to continue,
right?
Versus I don't like this guy's style or whatever. I mean, I think that's the art, is capturing that person. Wouldn't you, Tim?
Yeah, and it's capturing them it's about a truthful way, and it's funny because I've written about some bad people in the past. You know, people have killed people and such. And I've never had anyone complain that I misrepresented them. They might not like when they see themselves or what they say, but as long as you're truthful, they can't really complain about it.
Okay, I got to ask this question. We've only got 50 seconds left. Anybody ever wrote about that kind of scared you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, I had one there was a Providence. A guy from Providence who was a hitman who had spent about 35 years in jail. And he was quite scary. And there was another guy who was, do you guys know Whitey Bulger?
Oh, yeah.
With one of Whitey Bulger's lieutenants who had just gotten out after 12 years. And it was a little too fresh for him. And I mean, I was terrified sitting down.
Yeah, Whitey was not a nice guy.
Tim Strube, thank you
Tim,
so very
great.
Much.
We're going to get you back on.
Keep sending your stuff. I love reading your stuff.
Thank you guys for having me, I'll speak to you soon, hopefully.
Thank you.
Tim Strube, back after. Hey, welcome back. Mind on the Mayor. That was interesting with Tim. I want to get him on again and talk nothing except covering mafia guys.
Me too.
Todd, wouldn't that... We're going to do that, okay?
Would you
text him, email him back, say, Tim, we want you again. We're not going to talk sports. We're talking like mafia people.
Dedicating the show to... Yeah.
Yes. And
if he interviewed one of Whitey's lieutenants...
Yes.
And I think I told you when I was in New York, last year...
Well, there's a movie made about him, wasn't there? Was it like The Departed or one of those Irish mafia movies?
Don't know if there was the movie, but I mean, he didn't die that long ago, right?
Did he get killed in prison?
Yes. And that, why am I smiling? It was, he was put into prison, but then he got like transferred and to an area where he was not well liked. He turned on the mob.
Right.
I mean, that's not something that I would encourage. Yeah. I was telling you that when I went to New York one time, I took that mafia tour. And the guy who gave the tour, and it was a small group, 12 people. I went with Greta, and it was great. He walked around to these restaurants where they met, and where John Gotti was,
found out.
Then he takes you to that where that guy was killed, and he's showing you a picture, and it's like, wow, that's a restaurant right there. This happened in 83, 86, whatever. Yeah. But I asked him about Whitey, and his brother or his cousin knew him. Like
he, really?
And this guy was like, you know, like he knew him. He goes, oh, man. Cause he kind of felt a little bit, no, I don't know, I shouldn't say sorry for him. But, I mean, right, he was living in Southern California, kind of chilling out, had a couple dogs, and was just living a life. And I said, did he get a fair shake? He goes, are you connect? And he just really went off on him. So I find that very interesting, too. Just how ruthless. Fascinating. How ruthless they are.
You know, we always make fun of Giuliani. You know,
yeah.
But boy, what he did when he said, we're going to take down all five families in New York. All five at once. And the way they did it, technology made a big difference. So how they could tap their phones.
Right.
But it was just so funny because I watched that big special on that. And they, Tony, let me tell you something. Okay. I swear on my mother's grave, on my grandmother's grave, if so-and-so does it again, I'm going to take a knife. I'm going to stick it in his eye. I swear, I'm going to stick it in his eye till it comes out the back of his head. Yeah. You let him know that bleep, 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 bleep.
Yeah.
And they say, how's the family?
And it's weird how they could do that and then, you know, like.
Then just that way, a normal family.
Go to church.
Yes.
Exactly. Go to dinner.
Exactly.
I don't know. The book, remember the book Killer by Joey? And it was just, you know, this guy was just running numbers and just, you know, the life of a startup mafia guy. And
y'all want a mobster to run down Michael Franchisi. He talks not a lot. He was one of them. He was one of the five.
Okay.
Franchisi family.
Yeah.
Good looking guy. He was a younger guy. Yeah, okay, black hair.
Yes.
Yeah.
But he's in jail, right?
Is that the guy? I think he's out now. He went away for about 25 years, I know.
Okay. I just, and you know, we're all a little bit, I'm just interested in the whole, I don't know if that's a sexy industry, but it is just
fascinating.
It's fascinating. And it's,
I mean, they're terrible human beings wearing $5,000 suits with their grandkids going to First Communion.
Right. Armani suits and they're in there and, you know, and then go out and take someone out. And
with no problems.
I told you I had that. Father Calvecchio was obviously an Italian, Norbertine guy, and had this spaghetti. I think I mentioned this one time on the show. They had this the spaghetti recipe. And you just put in the anchovies, olives, the meatballs, and he said they would just let it simmer all day, and they'd go out and, like, knock people off. And they'd come home and be done.
Oh, my God.
It didn't need a lot of maintenance.
Isn't that something?
And he said this is a, and, you know, Calvecchio was obviously an Italian guy, and said, you know, this is a recipe that the mafia used. And it was really good, too, but it just simmered all day while they went out and did their dirty work.
Unbelievable. So anyway, Unbelievable.
But that when you go see your daughters, yeah, I got to get you that tour because and it's a walking tour. It's I don't know, through Little Italy, right?
Was it Genovese who was murdered outside that restaurant?
Yeah, and they got his
just
right outside there, and they got the pictures and his feet. And
Todd,
man,
please email him back.
Yeah,
say love it.
We
want to do another full segment with him, but to talk nothing except mafia and people like that.
And get behind the curtain that he's talking. How he did it?
Yeah, what he thinks of them as real people?
Yeah, that is a. An interesting field.
I've never met anybody I don't think that was like in the real mob. I mean, around here there isn't any.
No.
I don't think any place ever met anybody who was really in it.
Think about it. Yeah. I mean, I was in.
I mean, was there ever a mob around here? I mean,
I think we got some gangs that are infiltrated.
No, I know, but I mean, as far as like the old.
No, where they
did mob type
things.
Right,
where they did the loan sharking and ran a little business.
Jim, I got to tell you, Jim. You look like somebody that could be in the mob, doesn't he a little bit?
He would be there.
I would apply.
He would be their like accountant and their whatever. You know what I mean? He'd be that guy. He'd be that guy behind the scenes. So it's like, you got to do it. You didn't pick up. You didn't read that guy. You go pick it up right now. Go pick up right now.
And everybody that wants to talk to him has to come to his house
exactly.
And sit at his dining room table.
Exactly.
On the other end.
Right.
On the other end.
Across the room.
And then you know what? He'd have a newspaper on the table, okay? And he'd be looking at the newspaper, and the people, I'll put an envelope down, he'd put the newspaper on top of the envelope. And then then the discussion would begin, but not before.
Hey, welcome. Go see the mayor about some business.
Welcome. But that just an interesting feel, and I don't know if it's still alive and well, but this guy that gave us his walking tour, and I think you'd really get a kick out of it, because I think we're all a little bit interested.
No question.
I don't know.
Well, we grew up in its heyday.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
My goodness gracious, that was the heyday.
And, you know, people who've attempted to take the mafia down haven't always been real successful. So,
but they were. That was Giuliani. You got to give it to a man.
Yeah.
And, you know, same thing with some of those news reporters. And they were talking, you know, for like the New York Times or whatever about, I mean, they knew these mobsters on a first name basis. And shared meals with them.
But
and
they kind of lead by example. I mean, would you turn on the mob?
Oh, lordy, lordy, lordy.
I just don't.
No.
But people who
I
do...
don't know nothing about nobody.
Anyway. Yeah, that's... That will be fun to get Tim back on here, and I know he's written a lot extensively about the mafia, and that'd be fun to have his firsthand experience, and we'll share that with our listeners, because
definitely
that's just an interesting, I mean, sports is interesting. There's a lot of interest. Politics is interesting, but the mafia is like,
super, yeah, we got to do that again.
Super interesting.
Is it? Does it still exist? I don't even know.
I would say yes.
Okay.
But I don't, we're going to ask him. Tim will know.
Okay.
But I just don't think you totally distinguish something that's that powerful.
Actually, you know, the only person I ever met that would be like close in the periphery, I guess, Jimmy Hoffa's son.
Really?
I met Jimmy Hoffa's son here in Green Bay one time for something. Yeah.
Really?
Yes.
I was at the restaurant a couple times, the last place he was seen in Detroit.
The Jimmy Hoffa?
Jimmy Hoffa, right? Yeah. What was the name of that restaurant he was at? It's two names.
But I remember up in the UP, they were searching all over because rumors were...
He was up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, I don't know. That stuff is just interesting. And does it still happen today? Yeah. I just think it's disguised differently, but...
But it's not as classy.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. The Armani suits, the cars, the hats. Yeah.
Taking care of their families.
Right.
Little kids go to Catholic schools.
All right. Maybe that's what we can do, Johnny. We can start a new mafia.
Okay.
You're the Italian. I could act.
You're the accountant.
I could
act. The whole thing.
I'd like to do more than accounting, but.
No, I know, but you know what I mean? Well, that's just the.
Okay.
By saying the accountant.
Todd would be.
That sounds like a good name.
Jim, you could run the east side, okay?
Yeah, that's right. I'll take the west side. You take the west side.
All right. We got to start a quick break. We'll be back tomorrow after this.
Apple Store or Google Play Store, and text the studio directly, all from the Civic Media app. Download it today. Now, once again, here's Mino and the Mayor, John Mino and Jim Schmidt.
Hey, thank you very much. Welcome back, Mino and the Mayor, here on 97.9 FM, WGBW 98.3 FM, WISS, of course, the Civic Media app. 70 degrees in Green Bay, Appleton, and Oshkosh across the board. This segment brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Wisconsin. Let me tell you something. They got such great deals going on right now. Pay as low as $18 per window, $81 per patio door per month. Pella completes the installation, no mess, no hassle, leaving nothing but perfect results. This ends on the 31st. Visit PellaWI.com. You can verify that.
Love them. Love, as many of our listeners know, we made the investment in upgrading our windows, patio doors, regular doors, all Pella. It's lasted forever, and makes our house, of course, our house is a little bit older, but they can fit any style, right? They come over with their laptop. They say, hey, look, this house was built in 1980. Of course, our house was built in 1915. Give you three, four different options, and you just pick out what you want. And you're getting a patio door, right?
Yes, sir. I talked to you, but also we got a text here. If you and I were in the mob, Jim would be the restaurant owner with the linens.
Oh, yeah.
The linens. So we have a big thing about Jim with his linens.
Anyway.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. We've got some great guests in here. We talk about the community and, this community works, and it works because of a lot of different reasons, but one of them is the opportunities that we give the youth in our community. And when I say the youth, it can be, third grade to high school. And the Einstein Project is just one of those great venues, hands-on learning. And every study will show you that hands-on works much better than like Johnny and I. We just had nuns that read out of a textbook. That's why we ended up here.
That's right.
But there's kids out there that are really, really
That's
learning.
That's why we're BSing for a living.
This is it, man. This is where we get off. So, the Einstein Project, we have two directors with us, Dennis Rockhill and then Kim Limberger from the Einstein Project of Green Bay. And you've been around for a number of years because I had the opportunity to work with you.
So it's under your watch, huh?
Yes. I mean, right. But how long have you been in?
Well, the Einstein Project's been around for over 30 years. Yeah. So we've been doing science kits and curriculum for schools, you know, that long. The makerspace part of it, we started about 10 years ago. Yeah. As we were alluding to, we talked with you about it as we were kind of starting it up. So mm-hmm. we've been doing that 10 years.
Pretty cool. Tell us a little bit. We'll get to both of them, but Johnny, those science kits, you go into these schools but I mean, that is over my head. And I think it was in the fourth grade. I was in the fourth grade classroom. Yeah. I'm like, wow, this is cool. This can work. Tell us about the makerspace though. You started that with, you had a couple of your friends come in with you.
Yeah. So John Hill and Tim Hornberger were partners with me in starting it. It was called Proto Inc. And we started out in the third floor of the Central Library downtown. Tim was involved in Destination Imagination. John and I helped coach robotics teams. So it seemed like a really good fit to bring us three together and pull this, the whole program together. But we really started to focus on, youth and creativity development and, just basically hands-on skills.
Pretty cool to get these kids that, you know, again, a textbook is great, and mm-hmm. some of the videos are great, but I mean, you
hands
that,
on
that makerspace, that robotics, I mean, that's cool stuff that, boy, they can get the bite, and it's that they can make a career out of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the model of the human body, you know, and how much of the brain is used for each body part, you know, but the hands of this model are huge. You know, they're like the largest part of the body, and that is because so much of your brain goes to controlling, you know, these digits and phalanges.
We actually had a human brain in here about a week ago, remember?
Did you?
It was made out of rubber, but was it
the brain center or something?
Yes, like that. Yes, oh, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. We were here last
exact
week. One.
They were here last
in my
week.
Hands.
That's yes. the same one. So, yeah.
Yeah, so, but the combination of working with your hands and doing creative work is super good for your brain and super good for, you know, just emotional and intelligent development.
Wow. Kim, you're more into the schools kits.
Yep.
Tell us about, and that is really, what a treat for a school to get that.
Yeah. So we've been upgrading our curriculum, and we have been continuing to evolve our curriculum to meet today's students where they're at. So
what age do you bring these kits into these kids so that they can kind of get a hands-on versus just text?
We have kits for kindergarten all the way through high school now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny though, I can't think of an endeavor like you guys are involved with where you have to keep your head on a swivel and stay ahead of the game as much as technology.
Yeah.
My goodness. I mean, think mm-hmm. about your cell phone from 10 years ago or whatever versus now. How do you guys do that?
Yeah, well, actually, we're getting ready to go to Oregon next week to work on an AI project that we
No kidding.
We got some grant funding for and a proof of concept. So if it goes well, we'll be able to get a National Science Foundation
grant. 2 or 3 years ago, you could have said AI and some. What do you
to me, that always meant Adobe Illustrator.
We're all the same age. Now, I just think that opportunity that I wish every kid could get what you two offer. And parents can get engaged in this. Is there, I'm going to talk about both things. I'll talk about the art fest in just a little while, but first I want to stick with you, Kim. Look, as a parent, I would like my kids to get more hands-on experience. Cause somebody like Johnny and I went to Catholic schools, the nuns, they just never turned out great. I don't want to say this. The people I know weren't great scientists that came out of Catholic schools.
Well, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on it.
Well, there was emphasis. Right. It was, but boy, we know the 72 books of the Bible. Just go ahead and ask me anyone. But the emphasis and the really the funding too. I mean, those aren't cheap kits.
Right. Yeah, we were also lucky to receive a Brown County United Way grant to offer a free lease and free professional learning for every teacher in Brown County for the next 3 years.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's cool.
We're with Dennis Rockhill and Kim Lemberger, Einstein Project in Green Bay.
So, and Dennis, you work more, the whole robotics, I have a son-in-law who went to Madison that would just lose sleep over this, like they would build canoes, that cement canoe, that, and that's like they go to competition, mm-hmm. regionals, national, and mm-hmm. I think that's all started with organizations like yours, how they got into the whole robotics.
There's so many team-oriented, creativity focused competitions or just activities. You know, so Destination Imagination has all sorts of categories. First Robotics, Vex Robotics. I help with a program called Sea Perch and Underwater Robotics.
Wow. So, you know, and I did a story one time when I was with NBC 26 on a really good robotic team. I think it was DePuy High School. Yeah. I thought it was great that there were girls involved. And I know that sounds old school, like, well, the girls aren't into it. They're really into it, which I think is really cool. My era wasn't like that, just being honest. Wouldn't you guys agree?
We all know they're smarter than guys, but to get them involved.
Really? I mean, they're with this, you know, the sleeves rolled up, with the screwdrivers and the wrenches. Yeah. I thought that was really cool.
You know, the push is still on, though. We're not there yet. So we need to keep doing everything we can to encourage that trend to move forward. So we still got a lot of work to do there.
But at least it's begun.
Yeah. What I do like about what Dennis works on, it is a team. And there's a lot of concerns that people are very individual because of what Facebook and because some other things.
Absolutely.
And we have to get back to that. And something I teach at TC that's not it, but they do projects as a team, and people say to me, oh, you know, Mr. Schmidt, I don't want to just do this myself. It's like, no, I know you can do it by yourself, but you got to do this as a team because you've got to learn to work with other people that are a little bit different. And, you know,
we're all a team. No matter what you do, you're part of a team. We focus pretty point blank on that too. We have a series of challenges that we call creativity scrimmages. And the big part of that is team dynamics and collaboration and just how you interact with your teammates. And we focus on it to the point where, hey, when you were going, and they're short little challenges, right? So that they're like scrimmages. So you can blow the whistle and go, hey, you know, you zigged when you should have zagged. You know, and when you said this, it led your team in this direction. Is there a better way you could have done that?
So you can learn so much more from your fellows versus, like you always say, if you're the smartest guy in the room, find a different room.
Absolutely.
Because you're not learning anything. And with something like this, I think they feed off of each other, correct?
Absolutely.
And tell me a little bit, the kits, how have they advanced? And how is that an opportunity for every school? Or can parents assure that they can get these hands-on kits that you offer through the Einstein Project?
Well, talking to your school principal or curriculum director would be the best way to do it. We have gotten the new curriculum is based on phenomena. So it's really, the message hasn't changed. How we teach it does, right? So being able to have it be relevant to the students in their time right now. And our goal really isn't to create little scientists or little engineers. It's to create scientifically literate citizens.
What is the, okay, like when That's I was cool. a kid, I was big into like, every month I'd get something from like the Gemini program and you get these model kits of, you know, the rockets and everything like that. And I thought that was a huge, led to a surge in people being interested in those kind of things. And I wasn't smart enough to, you know, take the big time classes or anything, but I know other kids that were, and what is the thing now that has really been like a surge to help kids get interested in it and want to jump on the boat?
Right. So a little bit before COVID hit, there was a product called Kiwi Crate that came out. It's very similar to what you're talking about. And they had different versions like Kiwi Crate, Koala Crate, and it had to do with, you know, levels of complexity and age and that kind of things. But those kind of maker kits have been very popular.
Okay.
You know, we started doing some of that ourselves, but we found that the workshop experience where we're face-to-face with them and going kind of through the project with them was a little more valuable to our, you know, our local constituency.
Cool. So,
and people can get learn more about, I mean, you said talk to the principal. Do you guys have the Einstein Project in the school? What projects are my kids? Because I think one of the problems that the families face is exposure, right? I mean, they just, you don't know what you don't know. Right. And as parents, we all try to do our best. But open up a kid's life to music or to science or to some of the visual arts, the writing arts. And there's a lot of camps for that you can, if you can afford it, to send your kids to that. But you have something that we can take a look at this at Art Fest coming up, right?
Yeah, we're going to be at Art Fest this weekend. We have a new 28-foot trailer that is a mobile design lab.
It's really cool.
So we have a project that we'll be doing with anybody that wants to participate in it, and you can come through and take a look at the new lab.
I think that's awesome.
Yeah,
I think that's really cool.
28 feet, that's That's a lot of elbow room. I mean, that's quite an investment.
It is. We had a lot of help from different foundations that helped make it possible. Nelson Foundation, the Cornerstone Foundation.
Yeah, they're great.
Other contributors were terrific. So it's well equipped. It's plenty of space.
And where is it? When and where?
It's going to be at Art Fest this weekend. Awesome. We'll be there Saturday and Sunday.
You know, one thing I could never figure out that just stymied me, how you get electricity out of a potato. Have you ever seen that some kids, how do they do that?
That's why John never advanced.
Todd, you ever see that?
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like,
that's where you,
I could not, it's almost like if I couldn't break through by figuring that out, I might as well forget about anything else.
Didn't you just like put the hat on the guy and the ears on the side?
Just a potato head.
Oh, just a potato head.
Yeah. Make him angry. That'd be a lot of energy.
But I saw something where you could like jump a car with a potato.
Okay.
Have you seen that?
These are the scientists.
All right.
Kim, Dennis, they're both rolling their eyes.
All right.
No, actually, hijack a car with a potato.
John is have right back. On.
Whoa, hold on, I'm sorry.
I think John is right on because that curiosity is what's going to drive the wanting to know. That's what we want kids to be doing.
Thank you. John, we should have let you in the class. All right.
You're on your way.
This is just great that you've taken this curiosity. That's a really good point that you make, because I think kids, you 10, 11-year-olds, we're all curious about a whole bunch of stuff. And if you can channel that, Dr. Hunsinger, who runs the medical college here, wants to get more into the grade schools. He goes, there are doctors in there, but they don't know they can be a doctor. Like, kids don't know they can be a scientist. Kids don't know they can be an engineer. You know, I think some kids do, but I think a lot of them don't. And I think we have to trust our kids, you know, they're like, Dad, I really want to do this. It's like, let's encourage that and drill down a little bit more into Einstein Project and some of the things we're working on. So I think this is great. Awesome. You're bringing it to the community, you know, and I know you guys volunteer and I know you work really, cause I've known you for a number of years. You've been working hard at this, but look where it's at, a 28 foot display. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Art Fest.
You know, I looked at going to Michigan Technological University at one time.
Yeah?
To deliver pizza.
But then they asked me, what was my highest level of mathematics? And I said, 2. I said, advanced.
No soup for you.
And they go, calculus? No. Trigonometry? No. Geometry? No. They're like, well, I go, general math, 2. Never heard back from that. Hey, you guys, thank you so much. Dennis and Kim.
You bet. Thanks.
Great work you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Phenomenal work. We're going to start a quick break. Back after this.
Neuron.
Good heavens, Miss Sakamoto, you're beautiful. Hey, welcome back. That was interesting. I could talk to them for a long time.
From the mafia to science.
I know. But okay. You scoffed at me. You scoffed.
What
about jumping a car with a potato. I swear I saw something like this.
So that lady was
Todd.
Like, that lady was
I don't
that?
Know. I don't know if I remember that, but I do remember you could put like wires in a potato and then like light a light bulb or something, right?
Okay, well, that's like starting a car.
If it's a big enough potato,
I think they can. I know you could. My nephew drove to like Florida with a corn or for the fuel.
Yeah,
he did. He did that a bunch of college kids at St. Thomas
with corn for fuel.
Yeah,
really.
Mm-hmm.
But how'd they do that?
I don't understand that stuff. I came up in the world that you should never use food for fuel because we need food.
Well, you can use French fry grease, though, can't you?
Maybe that's what it was. It could have been that. Anyway,
well,
that was big
for a while.
That was going to be the next big thing.
That was like, 10 years ago, a bunch of college kids, which I think is a really cool experiment, and that is so in his world of doing that. I think it's really...
Well, you know, in like Germany at the end of World War II, they were so low on fuel. They converted cars so they could run on wood.
Yeah.
Their cars could run on wood. I wonder why that never stuck around. I mean, it seems like there'd be a lot of wood in the world, don't you think? Or no? Now maybe we decimate the forest.
You're at the intersection throwing some 2x4s.
Right. I mean, the only make and model is a semi.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to carry that. I don't know.
But wouldn't it be better?
This is interesting stuff.
When I was living in Idaho... you know what the biggest crop is in Idaho?
Potatoes.
No.
Well, let me think then. Idaho. I don't know.
Sugar beets.
I want to guess that.
Sugar beets are the biggest crop in Idaho.
I thought it'd be hot and humid.
The sugar beets. Idaho is hot and humid. Idaho is really hot, I'll be honest with you. But anyway, so they were talking about where sugar beets might be converted to a fuel in the future. Because this was right during the embargo with oil and everybody's you know, buying these scrambling, tiny little ugly, ugly cars. Remember the Yugo?
Yeah.
Oh, what was the other
30
one?
30 miles an hour, you're dead.
But there's another one like that. Renault? Was it a Renault? Renault type? Todd, look at about 1980, the tiny little...
Thank God we put in some
safety
standards.
Wasn't there one called
standards?
Like just Le Car? Do you remember that one?
Le Junk.
Le Car? Yeah. I mean, they were just these tiny little...
French, yeah.
Yeah, but
Le Car was made by Renault.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
How do they do the safety tests? There were no safety tests. I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying thank God Americans put in safety standards.
In fact, I think it was like when I was a kid, the kids would stand up in the back seat and lean over to the front seat. Well, Dad smoked.
But the science thing, I mean.
Oh, the Honda Civic was really small, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was really small.
Yep. But that one at least adapted then down the road.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
But none of those other ones ever. Like I said, I think the Yugo might be the worst car ever made, the ugliest car ever made.
I remember there was a comedian at the time. He's like, Yugo, you get in an accident and Yugo.
Oh, they were made out of nothing.
Yeah. Right.
I remember Saturday Night Live did a bit about that time. They had a car called the Adobe.
Okay.
And it was made out of Adobe. So, like, if you got into an accident, you would just reshape your fender.
It was really
made out of clay. It was pretty funny.
Oh, my gosh. But I think it's one of those things where that era, at least it got people thinking about other types of fuel. Never really took off, but I mean, because we always talk about, you know, gas prices. Do you notice gas prices were like $3.45 before the 4th of July? Now they're like $3.13.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, we're so controlled by that type of stuff. It'd be great. I'd like to take one of their classes with the Einstein Prize and come up with a way to invent a different type of car.
Did you see how that lady, you know, she's... people are watching this show, but that Kim, she looks like a teacher, doesn't she? I mean, she had that just the way the glasses, their presence, and just it. And when you said, you know, and a potato, you know, can start a car, and she's like, well, that's curiosity, Johnny. Yeah. Just like you're this little 10-year-old. She's encouraging you to explore it more.
But she's
a great teacher. But I think the curiosity, these hands-on things are what gets you excited about
it. Todd, can you make a super quick call?
All right.
Can you call my guy Royce at Green Bay Rebuilders?
I'll see what I can do.
What?
About, because he knows about this stuff.
The potato?
Because we were talking about one time. I used to love watching these shows where these like hillbillies in like North Carolina and West Virginia, they would, you know, living on these farms or whatever, and they're way out and whatever. So they'd have to like figure out ways how to do stuff. So this one guy had to fix his fence, and he put together welding. He welded from jumper cables on his battery. And he welded with that. See, I'm big into figuring out other ways to do stuff.
Like MacGyver.
Yeah.
That's cool.
How did I get out of the bathroom? Through that fireproof door?
You did.
Carving my way out, breaking the toilet tank top?
Yep.
Carving my way out?
I don't know if that was strategic. I think it was more of a panic.
What else was there to do?
Yeah,
tell me how you would have gotten out of that.
I would have to assess the... I would have probably taken another few seconds to look around. You panicked.
I did not panic. How is that panicking?
Come on. You couldn't. You were locked in a bathroom.
Yes, nobody was going to be there for the rest of it. So I was going to be there all
there you
night.
Go. No, see, now that's where you panic. He's like, I will never get out of here.
We got Royce. Royce.
All right, Royce.
Royce.
Go ahead.
Royce.
Yeah.
So you're on the air, so keep it clean, Royce, this time, okay? It's one time. Keep it clean.
Thanks for the heads up.
Royce, can you jumpstart a car with a potato?
Right. Oh. Okay. I had the same reaction, Royce.
I never have, but I have. Okay. I've seen the science experiments the kids can do in the science fair where they do something with a potato and somehow there's some type of reaction that gives you electricity.
Yeah.
I think it'd take a truckload of potatoes if you were going to try and jump
okay.
in a car, though.
Okay.
But
okay.
it could.
Like a semi-load.
All right. Okay. But Todd said that, and I don't know where John saw this somewhere, read this somewhere, and he's just infatuated with this potato to electricity. But Todd said there might be something where you can use a potato to maybe light a light bulb.
Yeah, I think it's a small light bulb. It's something to do with, I don't know if it's an acidity thing, because if you think about the way a battery actually works, all it is lead, sulfuric acid, and, you know, it's a chemical process. So if the correct chemicals are present in a potato to somehow be mixed, and I don't think you even need to mix it with anything, if I've seen, now you got me going down a rabbit hole here on YouTube later today, I bet. But, I don't know exactly how it works. I never covered that in any of my science books when I was a kid, but I do know I've seen it set up with, like a little meter, a gauge, and it's probes into a potato.
But
I'm not sure.
If it's got the same chemicals, the only thing I remember is my mom said we couldn't eat batteries and we could eat potatoes. So, but if it's the same...
You're crazy. Yep. Thank you, Royce. Hey, Royce, another time, though, we got to talk about how to build a welder out of jumper cables. Remember that one?
Ooh, that gets dangerous.
I know.
I've seen a lot of, I've heard people blowing up batteries because you get high voltage on that.
You could be blinded. There's no question. But
start
I mean,
your it's got to
be
good idea.
Thank you, Royce.
Thanks, guys.
Green Bay Rebuilders. Got to set a quick break back after this.